Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 14th, 2014. U.S. Ambassador Susan Page speaks out on the need to uphold the right to freedom of speech in South Sudan.
The Minister of Information has publicly threatened journalists, including for reporting on media just simply interviewing the rebels who are participating in the talks in Addis Ababa. One of the Voice of America journalists was also detained. This does no good for the image of South Sudan. It's important that they uphold their own constitution.
And at least 20 soldiers charged with targeting civilians during the crisis escaped from a military prison.
There is an order for them to be apprehended and tied. We have called upon the public and particularly the armed groups within the government, the intelligence, the security, to help in apprehending these escaped detainees.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan is urging warring parties in South Sudan to continue negotiations in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa to end the country's political crisis. Ambassador Susan Page says the U.S. expects the government and the rebels allied to former Vice President Riek Machar to show they are both committed to resolving their political differences quickly and peacefully.
It's not so much whether we're optimistic or not, but the fact is that there's no other solution. This is not a conflict that should nor can be won through the use of force and weapons. This has to be resolved through peaceful negotiations where people can understand each other and make a way forward to bring peace back to South Sudan.
Some people in South Sudan say foreign governments and international community are working very hard to remove the leadership in Juba. And one example recently, there was a huge demonstration in Juba and in Wau against a shipment of UN weapons that were intercepted in Rumbek. What is your take on this development?
Clearly, the shipment of the weapons that were actually for the Ghanaian contingent, working with UNMISS as one of the troop contributing countries, they did not follow the protocol that UNMISS has established, that any weapons for their troop contributing countries are meant to be shipped by air. However, this was an error. They have admitted their mistake, but it was not out of malice, nor was it to try to ship arms to any of the rebels, nor to the government for that matter. And the UNMISS is truly neutral, and we support UNMISS and its operations, trying desperately to help the people of South Sudan. Attacks against the UN, whether it's UNMISS or the agencies of the UN and the funds like World Food Program, UNHCR, which is working with the refugees and the IDPs that have been displaced, they do not serve the government of South Sudan well. These are organizations that were put in place by the United Nations and by the Security Council. And an attack on UNMISS is really an attack on the entire UN system.
Your government has invested millions of dollars in aid and developmental projects in South Sudan. Recent media reports indicate that U.S. is considering ending its support for security sector reform in South Sudan. Is that true?
Yes, we are reevaluating, and right now our security sector reform programs are on hold. We find it, given that the government itself has acknowledged that some 60 to 70% of the army that was of the SPLA has either defected to the rebels or has run from the army. So it does not make a lot of sense to continue support for an army that is not yet whole. And while recruitment of a new national army goes on, even in the light of the cessation of hostilities agreement, which suggests that they should not be recruiting new members to the armed forces, neither side.
There are several recent reports indicating that journalists are being threatened or questioned about their work in South Sudan. How free is the media in that country?
Well, this has been an ongoing struggle and a problem. The Minister of Information has publicly threatened journalists, including for reporting on media just simply interviewing the rebels who are participating in the talks in Addis Ababa. One of the Voice of America journalists was also detained for several hours. This does no good for the image of South Sudan. It's important that they uphold their own constitution, which does guarantee free press and free speech. Newspapers have been shut down. We abhor the pre-publication censorship, and it would behoove the government of South Sudan to allow media to publicly speak as well as to gather freely to express themselves.
That's Susan Page, U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan. She was speaking to me in an exclusive interview yesterday at the State Department in Washington. South Sudan's outgoing ambassador to the United States says he faced several challenges during his time here in Washington. Akech Koch sees his appointment as a mixed blessing. He says he spent most of his time trying to convince U.S. policymakers and investors about South Sudan's vast opportunity for investment.
I was appointed ambassador of the Republic of South Sudan to the United States in July 2012. It was a very great honor. I'm still thankful for the historic record for being the first ambassador of South Sudan to the strongest nation in the world, USA.
What were some of the challenges that faced you when you were doing your job here representing this new nation?
There were challenges politically because foreign policy reflects internal policy. And when there is discord at home, it is reflected in what is done outside. So I was confronted with opposing positions of one government articulated by different people whom I all represented. Politically, whatever I was saying was not seen to be credible. It was questionable most of the time because of the various positions given by senior members of the government of South Sudan at that time, and so it was one of the challenges. There were so many problems. The work which I was supposed to be doing to attract businesses to come could not materialize adequately because of perceived risk, the capital investment by some of the potential investors.
Despite these challenges, I'm sure there are some happy moments in your career as the ambassador of South Sudan here in the United States. You met President Barack Obama when you were presenting your credentials. I'm sure you met the Secretary of State. And would you like to share with us some of your happy moments in your job here?
You know, when I went to present my credentials, I was so delighted. I was really honored because all through the entrance, the salute, national anthem of South Sudan and of the United States played to your honor were very great. But the greatest moment was after having presented my credentials and had a short word with the president, which was to encourage South Sudan to appreciate what South Sudan was doing to strengthen the bilateral relations between the U.S. and itself.
When you leave the United States, what will remind you of your stay here in the United States as the first ambassador of the Republic of South Sudan?
I will be reminded by unfinished business. Whenever you start anything, building it is not easy. But I have a few achievements here and there, and there are a few shortcomings, things I have not completed doing, which were in my program, in my vision when I came in.
You have been interacting with a lot of members of South Sudanese here in the diaspora, and you know the problems that they go through. What was your advice to them as they continue to live here in the diaspora?
The community members here were the first ambassadors of South Sudan to the United States of America. They have also helped so much to create economic ties between some businesses here and South Sudan. They have helped bring needed humanitarian and social services to our people. That is a very great contribution for which I'm proud, and I want them to continue doing it because the need is even higher now.
Akech Koch is South Sudan's first ambassador to the United States. A senior foreign ministry official in Juba, who did not want to be mentioned, tells South Sudan in Focus that Koch, along with South Sudanese ambassadors in Ethiopia, Moscow, China, and Brussels, were recalled earlier last month, reportedly because they did not perform according to Juba's expectations. The International Rescue Committee says early rains in South Sudan have created catastrophic conditions for thousands of displaced people. The humanitarian agency says it is a race against time to provide shelter, sanitation, and clean water. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Heavy rain and powerful winds struck Juba last Friday night. The storm lasted just an hour, but when the skies cleared, the damage was severe. IRC South Sudan Country Director Wendy Teuber surveyed the UN-topping displacement camp, once filled with shelters made of plastic sheeting and bamboo sticks.
646 were destroyed in just 1 hour of that intense rain with the severe winds. The base holds 23,000 people, but if 1 hour of rain can do that kind of damage, it's a matter of time before hundreds more are losing their shelters.
About 8,000 people are living in flood conditions at the Tomping site. The IRC and other groups are encouraging the displaced to move to sites on higher ground. But Teuber says many are reluctant to move.
There's two bases holding displaced people in Juba. One of them is lower than the other. So one idea to try and help the situation is to relocate them to this drier site, which is also flood prone, but not as bad. But this is all within Juba. People are afraid to move too much, so it's a matter of making sure we can guarantee safety if we are able to move them to the other sites.
Teuber says at least 10,000 people should be moved from Tomping. The other UN base where the displaced have gathered in Juba is known as UN House. The muddy conditions will make any effort to move the displaced difficult. Teuber says another big storm is expected to hit the area in a few days. The roads around the camps are made of murram, a mixture of stone, sand, and earth. Teuber says when the roads collapsed from the rains, people used pieces of murram to construct shelters. In all, there are more than 700,000 internally displaced people in South Sudan. The early rains are expected to spread soon from the Juba area to other parts of South Sudan. Some 200 kilometers north of Juba, there's concern about what might happen in Minkaman, in Awerial County in East Lake State. There are about 50,000 displaced people there, many sheltering under trees. Construction has just begun on three new sites for the displaced in Minkaman. The International Rescue Committee country director says it's difficult to pre-position emergency supplies in South Sudan.
It's a difficult choice whether to have them stored here in a central location and then bring them out when the rain might make a place inaccessible, or send them out now. But in terms of the fighting that's still ongoing and lack of law and order in these areas, there's a great risk of losing the materials to looting and theft.
The International Rescue Committee also has programs in South Sudan to help protect women and girls from sexual violence. Teuber says as women leave the safety of camps to find shelter materials, they are vulnerable to attack. It's unclear how many women and girls may have been attacked since the conflict began in December. Teuber says South Sudanese women are hesitant to report such incidents. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Ugandan authorities say more than 70,000 South Sudanese have registered for political asylum with the Office of the Prime Minister since fighting broke out in mid-December. Uganda say all South Sudanese who have come to Uganda will be allowed to stay. Bonifacio Taban has more for VOA from Kampala.
Dozens of South Sudanese citizens show up at the old Kampala police station every day to register for asylum. Early this week, Brooke Rue arrived with his family. The Juba resident said he does not think it will ever be safe for him to go back to South Sudan.
I experienced a very terrible situation in which I saw my relatives, my good friends, are dying on the street. And they were humiliated and brutally killed. So as for me, I have no choice than to run away for my safety.
Ray said he feels he has no choice but to become a political refugee in Uganda.
Yeah, it was not my wish in the first place to be a countryless man. It was a situation that forced me to come out from there.
Douglas Asenwe, a senior protection officer in the Uganda Department of Refugees, said his country will give asylum to anyone who can prove they fled South Sudan because they believe their lives were threatened and would be still in danger if they returned. He said the majority of people requesting asylum are in areas that border South Sudan. He said the government is prepared to offer land to anyone who wants to settle permanently in the country.
Yes, we are settling them on land in West Nile, in Adjumani. We are working with the local communities, and we like to thank them so much, the district, local government of Adjumani district, and the elders and the communities who are availing land voluntarily to government to help in settling South Sudanese and use this land for the time they'll be here.
As we said, the situation is little trickier for people who want to settle in urban areas, including the capital, Kampala. He said officials are providing them with documents to prove they are legally allowed to stay in the country, but they do not distribute food or emergency supply to those people as they do for others living in the permanent settled camps. Tech David is another Juba resident who end up in Kampala. He said he prepared to live in the city because it will him chance to look for work, although he has not found a job yet. He said that put him in a difficult position because he does not feel it is safe to go home, but he cannot stay in Kampala if he does not find work.
I'm thinking to go back to my country because I don't have to live in foreign countries forever. What am I going to do here? As I don't have a job. Like, if I don't have some place to live also. Like, I don't have to forever live like a refugee.
For BOA News, I'm Boniface Yetaban in Kampala.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
To protect yourself and your family from sickness and disease, it's important to be careful about water. Bottled water is safe to drink and cook with. But if you can't buy it, be sure to purify your water by boiling it or treating it with an approved water sanitation kit. To destroy microorganisms that cause disease or even kill, you need to boil water for at least 5 minutes. Then wait to allow any sediment to settle and let the water cool down before drinking. To help protect you, your children, and your family from sickness, make sure all your water is safe to drink.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, arrested soldiers escape from a military prison in Juba. That story is coming up.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday, from 16:30 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can an average citizen fight corruption?
The average citizen to fight corruption is only when they are given the opportunity to do their thing freely without any intimidation.
Strict laws in terms of imprisonment and arrest.
I should really ask the government to strengthen institutions that fight against corruption.
Of course, a person like me, all I can do is not to get involved in any corrupt act. Corrupting public life, I don't get involved in it. That's what I tell all other people. Fighting corruption begins with individuals.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Army officials say 20 soldiers detained on suspicion of killing civilians during the crisis have escaped from a military prison in Juba. They say a total of 100 suspects escaped during last week's fighting over salary payments. Philip Aleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Sudan People Liberation Army spokesperson Philip Aguirre says the prisoners were able to escape because their guides were busy defending themselves or took cover when gunfire in the barracks intensified.
The SPLA is in search of those suspected criminals. There is an order for them to be apprehended at a time. We have called upon the public and particularly the armed groups within the government, the intelligence, the security, to help in apprehending these escaped detainees.
Agur says the 20 soldiers were being held as investigations continued into whether they carried out targeted killings of civilians in Juba when fighting broke out in mid-December. He says the other 80 soldiers were being held on charges of public drunkenness and looting during the crisis. He says despite the incident, the region around Gieta Barracks, which is not far from the University of Juba, is safe.
You've seen some of the buildings in Kiada were broken during the fighting. Their place where they were kept became vulnerable, and this is why they escaped. But in terms of safety, that was a safe place because that was within the military headquarters. Nobody expected what happened on the 5th of March 2014.
Officials say at least 65 people were killed when a dispute over pay broke out in the barracks. In an unrelated incident, Agur says SPLA Brigadier General Kwan Ding was shot and killed Wednesday night by unknown assailants. He said one arrest has been made in that case.
Suspect who have been arrested, who is a police soldier, and the investigation is going on. Definitely the nature of the killing will be known when the investigation is through.
Deng had been the SPLA commander in Pibor County and led the fighting against his former rebel leader, David Yau Yau, who has since made peace with the government under an amnesty program. Agud says Deng will be buried with honors this weekend in a will. For BOA News, I'm Philippa Leu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in London for talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on the crisis in Ukraine. Today's talks come as the Ukrainian region at the center of the crisis, Crimea, prepares for a referendum on Sunday that could see it break away from Ukraine and join Russia. U.S. and European leaders have called the Russia-backed referendum unconstitutional, and Kerry has warned Moscow of serious consequences if it annexes the Ukrainian peninsula. But Russian officials say voters in Crimea have a right to self-determination following last month's collapse of the pro-Russian government in Ukraine. Suspected Islamist militants have attacked an army barracks in the northeastern Nigerian town of Maiduguri. Witnesses say gunmen stormed the Giwi military barracks today, setting off a fierce exchange of gunfire with soldiers. And finally, Malaysian authorities say unspecified circumstances forced the search of a missing jetliner to expand into the Indian Ocean, thousands of kilometers away from where the Boeing 777 vanished from civilian radar last week. Speaking to reporters today, the transport minister offered no new evidence on the location of the missing jetliner, and he refused to comment on reports the plane kept sending automated electronic messages to communication satellites hours after it vanished on Saturday. And that's a look at today's top headlines and stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Sierra Leonean President Ernest Bai Koroma has announced a week-long mourning period in honor of former President Ahmed Tijani Kaba, who died yesterday at his home in Freetown at the age of 82. The government has ordered all flags be flown at half-staff as the country prepares for a state funeral. Ibrahim Ben Karobo, special advisor to President Koroma, tells VOA's James Batty most Sierra Leoneans remember the late Kaba restored peace to their country after a deadly 11-year civil war.
South Africa is a traditional mining destination, and what this bill does in the mining sector is it gives extensive powers to the Minister of Mining to decide who gets mining licenses and under what terms those licenses are issued. And we believe is going to result in capricious decision-making by the minister and ultimately a loss of confidence on the part of international investors in South Africa's mining industry. We believe that the bill has been set up to give the minister power to reward cronies and friends of the government. On the oil and gas side, the situation is even worse.
We excuse us for that mixed up in the tape. The United Nations is launching a campaign to end recruitment and use of child soldiers by 2016. It says 8 governments on the Security Council list of children recruiters have agreed to sign an action plan to end these violations and prevent them from occurring in the future. Lisa Schlein has the story for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations has a list of 55 parties that recruit child soldiers. Among them are 46 non-state actors and 8 governments, including those of Afghanistan, Burma, Chad, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, and Yemen. The UN Special Representative for Children in Armed Conflict, Leila Zerugi, is spearheading this campaign jointly with the UN Children's Fund. She says the outlook is promising because nations are unanimous that using children to fight in war is unacceptable and must end.
No government in the world is telling us, I have the right to recruit children and to send them fight. It's not your business. No one is telling us this. Out of the 8 that are listed, 6 already signed an action plan with the United Nations, and the 2 remaining are in a process of finalizing their action plan.
Yemen and Sudan have yet to sign the agreement, but say they are committed to stop the use of child soldiers. They presently are in negotiations with the United Nations to make this happen. The UN Action Plan obliges governments to ban their military from drafting and using child soldiers. It promises to release children from service and to reintegrate them into civilian life. It also calls upon states to criminalize this practice and ensure that no child under 18 is drafted. In the presentation of her annual report to the UN Human Rights Council, Zerugi spoke about the disproportionate and intolerable impact that conflicts around the world have on children. She noted armed conflict has intensified in several countries, most notably in Syria, South Sudan, and Central African Republic. She added that in other countries, thousands of children also are recruited, killed, maimed, raped, and kidnapped. The special representative spent 4 years serving in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. She says she was deeply affected by the terrible stories boys and girls told her about how they had been abducted, recruited, indoctrinated, and used as sex slaves.
Not only girls, girls and boys. That's what happened to them in the bush. They serve as cook, they serve as porters, they serve as sex slaves. And they are also human shields. That's the reality. You even cannot reintegrate them in their community when they return because you cut the link with the community and the family. It's terrible what happened to these children. And that's why we have all to be united and to work and to make sure that these children will never, ever be recruited. And those who are doing this have to pay a price.
Globally, the number of children recruited as soldiers is estimated between 250,000 and 300,000. Zerugi says governments are more aware of the harm done to child soldiers and of the shame attached to their recruitment. She says governments do not want to remain on the list of recruiters. They want to make sure their ranks are free of children. And this, she says, is what gives her hope that the Children Not Soldiers campaign can ultimately succeed. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's all we have for you this Friday. We now leave you with Emmanuel Camilo singing in his traditional Balanda language.
Ndaka teba kontang nonga banga wano tenu yo bandito ninde Ngodi welo di sine bibanga Ngodi welo di sine birunga Ngodi welo di sine bota Ngodi welo kere neri taibano me Ndaka ba matino ni ninde Ngodi welo kere neri taibano me Ndaka ba matino ni ninde
We have been listening to Emmanuel Camilo with a song in Balanda from Western Bahr el Ghazal State. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a peaceful weekend. And remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.